Okay, the next series of questions is also for the company. Mr. Quinlan, you said in Franklin that to completely bury Northern Pass, it would cost $1 billion more than $1.6 billion of project has proposed. I have three questions. Number one, is this based on a written assessment and specific assumptions that you will share with the public?
It's based on the analysis by our engineers and cost estimators. Now, one of the things that we've been hard at work doing over the last several months is firming up our project cost estimates. So when I mentioned some of the national contractors that we are working with, we are actually in the market bidding portions of this project. So we now have a second data point. We have our own experience in building transmission infrastructure, which we've built an extensive amount, but now we know what the market is for both above ground and underground constructions, and it's confirmed the basis for the $1 billion estimate that we're using.
The second question from this person says, how much of that $1 billion is allocated to burying the HVDC line between Pittsburgh and Franklin, and how much to the AC line from Franklin to Deerfield?
Yeah, so the there is a range. It's approximately $5 to $10 million of additional cost per mile of underground construction when you go from above ground to below ground. The $1 billion, and it's an estimate, is the midpoint of the range. Basically, it's about $7.5 million a mile that we use to get to the approximately $1 billion number.
And the third question from this questioner is the $1 billion figure predicated on burial on the current right-of-way as proposed in the SEC's application?
It's based on the linear distance and using the roughly $7.5 million of incremental cost per mile. Is there anything we would want to add to this?
Yeah, I'll just add that the total $1 billion of incremental cost is on roadways and not in the right-of-way, the overhead right-of-way that's available today. Eversource does not have the rights to put underground facilities in those existing overhead right-of-ways.
So that's a good clarification. Sam Johnson is one of our engineers. He's with Burns and McDonald. So they're a national engineering and project management contractor.
I'm going to ask, if you pass it off to anybody, please tell us your name first so that we have it in
yes.
the record. Okay. The next question is, can Eversource produce the signed power purchase agreement? If so, where can I find it in the application to the site evaluation committee?
Short answer is no. We're not in a position to produce it. It's not in the site evaluation committee. We have not yet executed a power purchase agreement with Hydro-Québec. We do, however, have a fairly detailed memorandum of understanding with our partner that outlines all the principal terms, which we will ultimately turn into a power purchase agreement.
Okay, next question is similar to one that you've already answered, but I'm going to ask it anyway. A key feature of the Forward New Hampshire plan is that 10% of Northern Pass power will be allocated to New Hampshire. Given that New Hampshire continues to be a net exporter of power, and once electrons are on the grid, they are untraceable, what, if any, significance does this promise have for New Hampshire ratepayers, and how would you fulfill it? Can you guarantee you will be able to enter into a power purchase agreement, and will the terms of any power purchase agreement be made public during the SEC process? What if other generators offer a better deal to New Hampshire ratepayers?
I think I just shared, we are at a memorandum of understanding stage with our partner. We feel pretty confident that we'll be able to turn that into a power purchase agreement. I think there's a mutual interest in doing so. Can I absolutely guarantee that it will be a power purchase agreement? That's difficult. Like all agreements, they're bilateral. It takes both parties to sign it. But we have a high degree of confidence right now that we're going to be successful. Why do I think it's going to yield benefits to New Hampshire? I know the terms. I understand how it's going to be priced. I understand the products that it's going to deliver to us, and I think it will be a very beneficial power purchase agreement for a clean source of energy into this region. ultimately, the New Hampshire Public Utility Commission will determine whether it's in our best interest for Eversource New Hampshire customers. We will fully negotiate it, we will sign it, we'll present it to the Public Utility Commission, and they will have to approve it. So it's not something we do unilaterally without an approval from a regulator who looks at it from a customer perspective. They say, is this in the best interest of Eversource New Hampshire customers? So they will have the ultimate say.
And what's your response to that last question? What if other generators offer a better deal to New Hampshire ratepayers?
Yeah, so we're always open to beneficial contracts if they're going to deliver significant benefits to our customers. Again, it's the same process that would have to be approved ultimately by the Public Utility Commission. It's not something we do unilaterally.
Okay, next question. Have you directly requested the New Hampshire Department of Transportation to use I-93 to bury your transmission line? If no, why not? You should not be interpreting their manual for them.
So I'm going to refer this question to probably Mark Hodgson. He's one of our experts. Mark, perhaps you could introduce yourself and explain your background.
My name is Mark Hodgson. I'm a private attorney in Concord who's been consulting with Northern Pass. For 24 years, I represented the Department of Transportation within the Attorney General's office. We have been consulting with DOT for 3-4 years on and off, and have had extensive discussions with them. And as I've said at previous meetings, and it sounds like somebody, this questioner has heard this before, but the DOT requirements are, very simply, that with regard to I-93, initially we asked DOT, where would you prefer it? And DOT said, we would prefer it on roads other than I-93. However, if you comply with our manual, we'll look at whatever you want. They have adopted rules and regulations in a manual regarding utility usage of highways, all highways. And a section in that applies to interstates, particularly I-93. I don't have to tell anybody down in this area of the state how important I-93 is to the state of New Hampshire. In Londonderry, it's well known. With regard to the interstates, the essential purpose of the interstates are to provide optimum safety and mobility for the traveling public and through traffic. And DOT zealously guards that purpose. That's what they're there for. That's why they don't have driveways on them, and they are what's called controlled access or limited access. The manual prohibits longitudinal, meaning along the highway, utility installations. As a general rule, they are prohibited. DOT will consider longitudinal installations if you can meet certain criteria, primarily, quote, extreme hardship, meaning you have to have no other viable alternative. And Northern Pass proposal, by definition in this instance, is a viable alternative. And if you think about why they are concerned about protecting I-93, think about these things. The speeds that we're talking about on the sections of 93 that are relevant to this project are mostly 70 miles an hour posted. Anybody that drives it knows those actual speeds are higher than that. The volume of traffic is tens of thousands. It's got a high percentage of truck traffic, heavy truck traffic. The roads that we're proposing to use have, in most instances, 30 or 40, maybe in few instances, 50 mile an hour posted speeds, and speeds substantially less than the interstate. Their volumes range from a few hundred cars a day, rather than tens of thousands, to several thousand at the most. And the truck traffic is less. That's why DOT prefers you to be on those roads. Then, if you think of the, you know, in the North Country, I-93 isn't an option anyways, because I-93 essentially goes over into Vermont and Littleton. So the North Country section doesn't apply. In Bethlehem, where we go down Route 18, 116, and 112, that's to bypass Franconia Notch. And a separate requirement, if anybody knows Franconia Notch down here, I don't know if anybody's driven it, but most people have, you'll note that that road is very different, the parkway is very different than the rest of the interstate. That's because when it was built, because of the high environmental and cultural sensitivity of that area, they prohibited traditional interstate construction. That's why it's only two lanes undivided. And that is, at the time, I think it still is nationally, the only exception on the interstate system where that's true. I think that's still true, but I'm not 100% sure, but at the time it was. And that was because of that incredibly environmentally sensitive and culturally important area. There was litigation regarding that, and there is a memorandum of agreement in federal court that prohibits any additional construction in that area. So if you have to bypass, and I think it's wise to, from an environmental point of view, the notch, you're on those roads anyways. So those roads, 118, 116, 112, are going to be required anyways. So I-93, from a practical point of view, isn't available to us in that area, from a practical and legal point of view. Now, even if we could show extreme hardship for I-93, what DOT envisions, if you're going to use I-93, they want you to create essentially what they call a utility corridor outside at the edge of the right-of-way where the fence line is. If you drive on the interstates, you'll notice off to the right or left, you'll see a fence off in the woods. That's the edge of right-of-way. That's where DOT wants you to be. And you can't access that area. DOT won't allow you to access it from the interstate. So it means you have to build a access road paralleling I-93. That's going to take down enormous amounts of trees. You're going to impact ledge, you're going to impact wetlands, and you're going to change the character of that road in a way that I don't think New Hampshire people would find acceptable. Because DOT prohibits, under all circumstances, construction in the median or underneath the roadway itself. And that's their policies, that's their rules, and they've asked us to comply with them.
Thank you. The next question is the expansion and raising of the Eversource line running from the Scobie Pond substation into Hudson needed only because of Northern Pass, or is there some other reason? I think you're talking about the Merrimack Valley project.
That is true. That is the Merrimack Valley project. The expansion that Northern Pass will impact would be the Deerfield substation corridor down to Scobie Pond.
Yeah, but the question is the expansion and raising of the line running from Scobie Pond into Hudson needed only because of Northern Pass or for some other reason?
That's a reliability project. That's a completely different.
Yeah, and just so we're clear, so that's referring to the Merrimack Valley Reliability Project. Attorney Iacopino mentioned it earlier. That's a what's referred to as a reliability project in the eyes of the independent system operator. It's something that is needed to keep the lights on. It's in essence needed to ensure we have a stable grid throughout New England, including New Hampshire.
Next question. Eversource has said that Northern Pass is an unregulated utility. Why is Eversource petitioning the PUC for Northern Pass to do business as a public utility?
Jim Munz, who's the president of our transmission business.
Yeah, to put infrastructure in the public right away, you need to be a public utility. You know, many businesses, request that status. You know, cable TV providers, telephone companies. So that's the purpose of Northern Pass becoming a public utility.
And just so you're clear, so we're clear, I think the question says that Northern Pass is an unregulated company. I think in that context, it means that the rates are not governed by the Public Utility Commission. Okay, we are not intending to pass any of the costs associated with this project onto retail customers here in New Hampshire. So there is no need for Public Utility Commission regulation.
And Bill, I would just add that Northern Pass would be a FERC-regulated entity in the end.
Yeah, FERC being the federal rate regulation body. Okay. So any costs that are recovered by Northern Pass Transmission will be done pursuant to a federal approval.
Okay, next question is, Northern Pass has promoted better electric rates for New Hampshire as a result of this project. Could you please outline in detail the estimated savings and also address if this project will have any impact on the transmission fees and other fees that are included in our monthly bill?
Okay. Take the second question first. Short answer is no. None of the costs of this project will be borne through transmission rates. First question is, what are the energy cost savings and how are they derived? Again, you're taking a new energy supply, which is affordably priced, 1,090 megawatts, and injecting it into New Hampshire. That new power supply drives down energy costs, electricity costs, across all of New England. The $80 million per year reduction is our estimation of what that effect will be for New Hampshire customers only. When you extrapolate that to all of New England, it's roughly $800 million a year. And it's due to the injection of a new power supply into the market.
The next question is about your slideshow. What does the illustrative slide for Deerfield Center mean? Is the representation of the actual new pole height correct? Is this the actual or just a rendition of a drawing?
Yeah, so again, it was illustrative. It was intended to demonstrate that we have done a lot of visual simulation work. It's something that we know there's a keen interest in. Terry DeWan, our visual simulation expert, could answer the specific question.
My name is Terry DeWan, and I was responsible for the visual impact assessment work. To get back to the Deerfield example, this is one of 30 different simulations that we did to give people an understanding of what it would look like, showing both the existing conditions and what it would look like with the proposal in place. And what we do is model it in a computer software that is based upon very accurate information from the design engineer. So we know the exact height of the structures, we know the spans of the conductors of the wires, we know the spacing, and so we then combine the computer model with the photograph, make sure that they're properly registered, and then produce a final, what we call photo simulations. If you go to the document that was submitted, the visual impact assessment, you'll be able to find that very slide, plus what we call a panoramic view that provides a little bit more of the context, so you see that image in the context of that particular situation in Deerfield Village.